From the land-grant university in Urbana, Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 18th day of May, 2026. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Kurt Kimmel. He's from agmarket.net out of Normal, Illinois. He'll tell us all about the big rally that took place in Chicago at the CME Group today for corn, soybeans, and wheat. And then we'll turn our attention to the differences between raising a corn crop in Iowa and raising a corn crop in Mato Grosso, Brazil. Financially, that is. We'll be joined by Joanna Colucci, who's penned an article for the Farm Doc Daily website. She's at Purdue University, an agricultural economist there. And as we close out our time together today, we'll take a look at the weather forecast with Mark Russo from Everstream Analytics. And I'll bring you some comments that Jamison Greer, the U.S. trade representative for the Trump administration, made yesterday on the Sunday morning news programs. You want to stay with us for that right here on this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report that comes to you from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today at $4.77 on its settlement price, up 21¼ cents. December, that's the new crop at $4.98, up 17. July soybeans, 36 cents higher. The settlement price at $12.13 for the old crop. New crop at $12.01 in the November, 30¼ cents higher. Bean meal up 21 cents. The bean oil $1.75 higher. July soft red winter wheat gained 28¾ to settle at $6.64.5 for the harvest month. And the harvest month hard red at $7.03¾, up 15¾ cents for the day. Live cattle futures in Chicago down 77.5 cents at 247.15, feeders 260 lower at 358.85, and lean hogs $102.75 for 100 pounds, down 60 cents for the day. Crude oil up $3.54 at $104.54. That's the WTI, and the crude oil in the Brent at $112.13, up $2.86. Here to talk about these numbers is Kurt Kimmel. He is at agmarket.net. Hello, Kurt. Thanks for being with us again on a Monday.
Glad to be here for a Monday again. Thank you.
Now, tell me about the marketplace as you saw it develop overnight and during the day trade today.
Giddy up. Here we go again. Jiminy criminy going home Friday there. Some fairly nasty reversals to the downside. A lot of wish I could, I should, I would. Now we're back to where we were before we broke almost. Deese corn near $5. November beans just closing above $12 benchmark. So student body left, student body right, the risk on, risk off. But I guess there's a White House fact sheet that came out, and they upped some ideas on a little bit more detail on what China could possibly do. In addition to the 25 million metric ton bean commitment, which is valued close to anywhere from anywhere $10.5 to $12 billion. There's supposed to be an additional $17 billion on top of that, putting total ag purchases near this $28 to $30 billion mark. And so therefore, it's, you know, a lot of money, a lot of optimism, which could come into the ag sector. No real confirmation on this news from China for the most part. We'll have to see several things fall in place, but what little signals there was anywhere close to 400 export licenses granted for beef plants or renewed beef plants to ship beef to China. Why? I don't know. Because basically we're looking at record high beef prices here in the U.S., so why would we be trying to curb inflation and export beef to China? We'll see. And then the other thing is we did see from the commercial side, there was some Chinese interest in sorghum out of the Gulf. So there's some cat and mouse things going on here where there was quite a bit of optimism. Going home there last Friday, the funds liquidated a fairly large long position, but today going into midday, they came back with their buying shoes on and two-fisted buying with buying up to 30,000 contracts of corn, 16,000 contracts of beans, 7,500 of wheat, 4,500 meal, about 6,500 contracts going into midday. So, boy, we put a lot of optimism back into the marketplace here. I think the trade is going to be eager to see confirmation on this. Then plus two, how's this going to be enforced? If it's going to be enforced, if you go back to phase one, phase two, phase three, or whatever, with the administration at that time did not hold their feet to the ground on this. So bottom line is optimism. I looked at John Deere stock. If there's that much optimism, John Deere stock should have been up, because you give a farmer $1, he'll spend $2. So I think he can look around in some other sectors to try to confirm. Also, too, if we're going to be selling a bunch of grains and ag products to China, shipping, you need to watch the shippers, too. So hopefully we can keep these gains going here for a while as we move forward, Todd.
We'll follow up with some more information about the trade deals that has deliverables have been struck, maybe, between China and the United States a little bit later in this program. I do want to know what you're thinking about planting progress for this past week and how farmers did getting into the field.
Yeah, there's quite a bit of catch up, also quite a bit of replant take place. Going home Friday there, they thought we'd see 60% of the corn, 50% of the beans. The official guess is 75% of the corn's in the ground as a nation. The range is anywhere from 72 to 78. Soybeans planted, the average trade guess is about 67%. The range is anywhere from 63 to 75%. So we're continuing to stay above the average pace. We're above last year's pace. For the most part, it's going to come down to maybe that last 5 to 10% getting in. But we're mid-May. Probably the thing is, with this heat coming on here, helping the crop move along here, we'll hopefully get some crop conditions reports here as we get in the second half of May.
Hey, thanks much. We'll talk with you again soon enough.
Very good. Take care.
Mm-hmm. That's Kurt Kimmel. He is with AgMarket.net. Joanna Colucci now joins us. She is an agricultural agronomist at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. Hello, Joanna. Thanks for being with us.
Hello, Todd. Thanks so much for having me again.
You have written an article that's been posted to the FarmDoc website, along with many other places, titled Comparing Corn Production Cost and Returns in the United States. We probably should start not with the conclusions of this article, but with some of the methods and where the data comes from. Because Purdue, for a very long time, has pulled data from a larger set of production costs from around the planet. Can you tell me about that data set?
Yes, this data comes from the AgriBenchmark network. That's a global network that compiles production and economic information on many activities like beef, cash crops, dairy, across 35 countries in North America, South America, Europe, Asia. And the AgriBenchmark concept of typical farms was exactly developed to facilitate the comparison between different countries and different agriculture systems. In this article, we explored specifically the United States and Brazil.
Of course, Purdue has a long history of using the AgriBench network to come up with the data comparing production cost across countries. In this case, you're looking at an Iowa farm and a farm in Mato Grosso. Can you give me some of the basics of the size of these farms?
Yes. So when you think about the average area planted to corn over 2020 to 2024 was almost 6,000 acres on the Brazilian farm and almost 2,000 acres on the U.S. farm. And we express all this information, the costs and revenues in dollars, of course, to enable do the direct cross-country comparisons.
Just to be sure and to clarify, on the farm in Mato Grosso, this was for the second or safrinha corn crop only?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Tell me about the primary differences between producing a corn crop in Mato Grosso and Iowa.
Yes, when you look at the cost shares, for example, for corn production, direct costs dominated the typical Brazilian corn farm, accounting for more than 50% of total costs in every year analyzed. And basically, this reflects Brazil's high input expenses, especially for fertilizer. We know that corn is particularly dependent on nitrogen, and these prices rose significantly after 2022 because of the disruptions related to Russia-Ukraine war. And also Brazil is also heavily dependent on nitrogen imports, which supply nearly 95% of the country's consumption. Meanwhile, from the typical U.S. farm, overhead costs accounted for the largest share of total production costs in three of the 5 years analyzed, representing more than one third of total costs. This large share primarily results from land values appreciated that contributed a lot to higher land costs over the last few years. And the exceptions were 2022 and 2023, when the direct costs exceeded overhead costs because of the high fertilizer prices.
What does this tell you, or what kind of conclusions can you draw about the differences then between, and the impact mostly between, these two kinds of production cost setups, where in the Iowa farm it's really the long-term investments that make the difference and make up the bulk of the price tag, as opposed to the farm in Mato Grosso, where they're paying more than half of the cost of production of a corn crop on the input side. So how does that play out in the financials for these two sets of farms?
So when you put together the total cost production and the gross revenue, economic profits, they are different between two farms. Both farms, they had record profits in 2022 when Chicago corn futures prices exceeded $6 per bushel. But when you compare as a whole, the Iowa farm had higher total costs between 2020 to 2024, largely because the higher overhead and operation costs, including land, machinery, labor, and capital-related expenses. And in contrast, the Mato Grosso farm had lower total costs, but its cost structure was more heavily concentrated in direct inputs, especially fertilizers, and less concentrated in operation and overhead costs. We should remember that the role of the second crop corn in Brazil also helps explain those differences, as land and some machinery-related costs can be spread across soybeans and corn within the same production year. In contrast, the second crop corn is more exposed to production risk because planting happens within a very short window after soybean harvest, and also depend heavily on the timing and duration of the rainfall season. So we can say that also there are another difference. Unlike soybeans, where average yields in the two countries are very similar, average U.S. corn yields are more than twice as high as Brazil's because of decades of specialization and high developed production systems here in the U.S. And then I would say that Brazil's growing competitiveness is driven basically because of the ability to expand corn acreage through second crop production, and also as a consequence, spread some fixed costs across two crops. and produce corn at a lower total cost. So I would say that's the big difference when you compare Brazil and United States, especially Mato Grosso. That's the number one corn production in the U.S. And Iowa, that's also the number one corn production producer in the United States.
So the bottom line for you is that the U.S. continues to hold an advantage in those production and scale cost as it's related to corn, particularly in years when the price of fertilizer and direct cost, the input, are higher, I would think?
Yes, I would say yes, because when you compare the total production in Brazil and U.S., Brazil is three times the United States is three times bigger than Brazil. So the United States has scale. The production is much higher than Brazil, the total production. And also the yields are double than in Brazil. So Brazil is growing, but the growth in corn production in Brazil is based on the second crop that also is still a lot of room to continue growing. But the competition or the competitiveness of Brazil is based on the lower total costs. But the United States kind of can offset that with higher yields. So, I mean, it's a completely different agriculture system. When you compare soybeans in Brazil and US, the agriculture system are much more similar than when you compare corn production because of the second crop in Brazil. That's represent almost 80% of total corn production.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Joanna Colucci is an agricultural economist at Purdue University in West Lafayette, Indiana. You may read her article on the Farm Doc Daily website or at willag.org. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Monday afternoon. Our theme music is written, performed, produced, and courtesy of Logan County, Illinois farmer Tim Gleason. Yesterday on CBS's Face the Nation, the U.S. Trade Representative was asked about the new Board of Trade structure the Trump administration hopes to put into place to manage relations with China. Jameson Greer said the board's development will be important to formalize trade relations as opposed to creating it on the fly in an ad hoc form. A note here for me, this sounds a bit like a bilateral replacement for the WTO or the World Trade Organization. It's not clear that's exactly the case, but Greer did suggest it would deal with a host of tariffs, import controls, export controls, and even non-tariff barriers. On that last note, Greer says China, during the visit last week, agreed to reduce a host of non-tariff barriers on agricultural products like beef and poultry. He also, when pressed, went on to say the Trump administration believes under the trade deal struck last fall that it still has the ability to impose tariffs on incoming Chinese goods.
The Chinese know, just like many other countries we're dealing with, that we're going to have a certain level of tariff to control our imports, but that we also expect market opening.
Here's how Greer talked about the agricultural product deliverables from the meeting between Presidents Trump and Xi.
So first of all, we've had a deal in place with the Chinese since October that they would buy 25 million metric tons of soybeans each year for the rest of the president's administration. So that deal is still in force. What we expect with the new purchase agreements, where the specific number will be announced very soon, double-digit purchases of aggregate agricultural products. When I say aggregate, I mean everything else. That could be soybeans, that could be beef, that could be grains, that could be dairy products, all kinds of things. So we have the existing soybean deal that they may be referring to, and then over on top of that, we have these agricultural products as well, and all of that will be facilitated by Board of Trade discussions with the Chinese.
Now, there are a couple of new bits of information in Greer's comments there and on the White House website. First, the trade representative said the 25 million metric tons of soybean purchases would come in, quote, each year for the rest of the president's administration, unquote. It's not been clear until now whether those sales were pegged to calendar or marketing years. By Greer's account and this note on the White House website, it's calendar years. The note reads in part, quote, China will purchase at least $17 billion per year of U.S. agricultural products in 2026, prorated. 2027 and 2028, in addition to the soybean purchase commitments that it made in October 2025. Unquote. Let's turn our attention to the growing regions. We'll concentrate to begin with on the Corn Belt. Mark Russo is here. He is with Everstream Analytics. Hi, Mark. Let's get right into it. What do you see for the weather as it's related to the Corn Belt? You can talk about the storms we've had and the storms that are coming.
Sure, Todd. Well, looking back here over the past week, let's start there, where we did see mostly dry weather across the summer crop belts, especially here across the Corn Belt. And as a result, we are expecting some pretty big jumps in the state planting numbers that will be issued here this afternoon. And coming up, we expect favorable weather here and planting to continue through the remainder of the month. Basically, the Corn Belt and most summer crop areas will continue to be at a pace which is either close to normal or ahead of normal due to precipitation, which will be generally close to normal, and temperatures averaging out to be near to even above normal.
So the rainfall events that have come and will continue to come are kind of in the range of what we expect and really pretty good for a beginning of the crop.
Yeah, exactly. Just continuing this generally favorable start.
Tell me about those areas that we have not had the best of rainfall. I'm thinking really of the hard red winter wheat growing regions of the United States.
Yeah, the plains as well as the Canadian prairies, those are the areas having issues. And for the plains hard red winter wheat belt, again, those issues are primarily due to the long-term dryness across that region. And as we've seen with the recent, you know, updates and in numbers here for the Plains Hard Red Belt, they continue to be in very poor shape. And we just haven't seen any kind of significant improvement in soil moisture this spring. And coming up, as the crop matures and starts to be harvested, we don't see any, you know, turnaround in the situation.
Check in on the safrinha or second crop corn for me in Brazil.
Yeah, for Brazil, they continue to be in good shape with no issues of note at this time and still some additional rains, which for late May and in early June, that's a bit unusual, but they can happen if there are frontal passages across the region. And that's what Brazil or the safrinha areas have seen in recent weeks and will continue to see over the next week or two. And so with the upcoming rains, most of those scattered rains are going to be focused south in around Paraná, whereas up north, any rain activity will be very isolated. But all in all, the safrinha crop continues to be in good shape. There's no sign of any changes in that here over the next few weeks. Even from a temperature standpoint, we always have to watch at this time of year any kind of anomalously cold weather that could be a freeze threat. And we don't see any of that as well looking out over these next few weeks.
Hey, thank you much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome, Todd.
You too. Mark Russo is with Everstream Analytics and helped us to wrap up this Monday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.